September 21, 2021. It's a lot for Pedro show.
Thank you.
Pedro Show. Happy Tuesday. I think it's the last day of summer. Moving up. You can tell people. Not Man Alone, right? We'll get to that. Yeah. First, I want to start the show off with John Coltrane doing Naima live at Juan Les Pen and Teeb, July 27, 1965. And then Mike Cooper with Summer Without Waves. Uh-huh. And, that voice you can hear. Those Skype engineers from Estonia. I should have said Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention made it possible. I got Mike Cooper. How you doing, Mike? Welcome aboard.
I'm good. Yeah, thank you.
And what's the weather like in Rome right now?
I'm not in Rome. I'm in Valencia in Spain. I left Rome about 2 years ago now.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? Slow learner. The only thing new is me finding out about it. Okay, Valencia. It's a great town. I got some buddies from there. In fact, I think that Route 66 magazine, rock and roll magazine, is out of there and stuff. Mike, wonderful guitar player, man. I would like to learn about your journey through music. Can you bring me your earliest musical recollection, please?
My earliest musical recollections, listening-wise, I guess, I started listening to, obviously, early rock and roll when it first happened, and then I started listening to a lot of jazz on Voice of America, which came from Europe on radio, and so that's my kind of listening initiation into music. And the first live stuff I ever heard was jazz, of course. Yeah, it would have been jazz.
The pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
Oh, yeah. I grew up in Reading, which is like half an hour from London by train or car. Yeah, there's stuff there, yeah.
I played a festival there with the Stooges. It was the day of Katrina. Terrible over here, but it was 100 degrees. And all these, which ain't that common there. Well, maybe nowadays it is, but...
No, it's not that common in England.
Okay. Yeah, because the cats had their shirts off and people were calling them roast beef because of the pink. Okay, so what kind of instruments? Was there a guitar?
Yeah, we had a guitar shop, and I bought my first guitar in Reading, and I bought it in a what you would call a pawn shop, a second-hand shop.
Sure, pawn shop.
Yeah. I bought my guitar there, and I had a little wooden guitar, but then in the same shop, I bought my my National Resonator, Resophonic triplate, which I still play today. I bought that there, and that was only the second guitar I ever had. And wow. I bought that for £8 sterling.
Damn. Now, how old were you, Mike?
When I bought the guitars, I was quite a late beginner in music. So it was just after I left school. So I was like 18, 19.
So you weren't part of the marching band or the choir or any of that shit in school?
Nothing at all. No. In fact, I got thrown out of the music class in school. They told me I was a totally unmusical person. It's probably true.
I got told that. It was the seventh grade, and, you know, they gave me the clarinet for 10 weeks, and Mr. Luna was the teacher. He said, Mr. Watt, you try hard, but you should stop wasting your time,
my time.
And then he looked at the rest of the class, and he said, our time. So, I never took another. Luckily, my buddy wanted me to be his bass. Well, his mother put me on bass. What was the first record you bought with your own money, Mike?
Someone just asked me that same question today on an email message, and I think probably I bought Django Reinhardt record, and then I bought a John Lee Hooker record.
And the first gig you saw, you said it was some kind of jazz.
Yeah, we had about three jazz clubs in Reading. They were places that played New Orleans jazz, of course, at that time. So. So, yeah, that was the first stuff. We used to go and dance to New Orleans stuff, yeah.
Good stuff. Satch.
Yeah.
And the track kit was invented there. I mean, there's a lot of music history. Congo Square in New Orleans, incredible. For music. Yeah. So when you got that guitar, that resonator and that acoustic, did you go find a teacher? Did you take lessons?
No, I'm so totally self-taught at everything that I do, even walking.
Now, how'd you do that? Did you buy books or did you just listen to records and like?
Yeah, I had listened to the radio, and I did buy some books. There's a very famous guitar book amongst English guitar players. It was written by a guy called Bert Whedon, and it was called Play in a Day, which is kind of almost true. And then I also had a Jimmy Baker guitar book, which didn't really teach me a lot, but the Burt Whedon one, I learned more from that. And then I just started to try and imitate stuff I was hearing on the radio. And when I say imitate stuff, I was obviously trying to play pop songs and things like that, you know. And trying to sing, because I really wanted to be a singer, not necessarily a guitarist.
Oh, like what, singer-songwriter?
Well, no, I just wanted to be, I liked singers more than guitarists at the time. Listening to Django Reinhardt, I thought, I'm never going to be able to do that, so I'm going to do something else.
That guy was pretty incredible.
Oh yeah, I was like, you know, he's only got two fingers.
I know. He's like whooping it up pretty big time.
Yeah.
Another guy. What about Charlie Christian? Did you listen to him?
Well, I never got to as far as that at that particular time. Later on, I did, of course. Yeah, yeah. And Barney Kessel and people like that. Yeah.
I got to see him play live.
I'm glad you did. I'm very, very, very jealous that you did.
Yeah, he played in my town. Yeah, Des is a friend of mine's. Yeah. He booked him. And he made a record with John. I think it's the only guitar record John Coltrane made.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so you would see guitarists at these jazz clubs. Did any of them have influence on you?
No, there weren't a lot of guitarists there, in fact. And I think that...
Oh, because it's Dixieland. Yeah, so a lot of...
Yeah, yeah, it's all banjo players.
And banjo, right.
Yeah, not a lot of guitarists.
No. And in fact, in old days, guitar was in the rhythm section. And
Sure.
Right? Charlie Christian kind of changed that.
Yeah.
People like Django. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, it became a lead instrument instead of a percussion instrument. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so one of the first, I was trying to like hack around on the little wooden acoustic I had, and one day I went to a friend's house and there was a guy from Trinidad, and Reading was an interesting town in the, this is the late 50s, because it was one of the first towns where the Caribbean people came over to England and settled in Reading. And this guy, Johnny, was a young guy, he was in his 20s. And he played guitar and he sang Hank Williams songs. And I was very impressed by that. So that put me on another road altogether.
So the idea of songwriting, okay.
Yeah.
A little 2-minute, 3-minute. Yeah, Hank Williams, yeah. Great songwriter. So,
yes.
Yeah, and so you're looking at the guitar more as like an accompaniment?
Sure, yeah. It was something for me to sing to. You know, I couldn't stand up and sing with no accompaniment because I didn't have a band or anything. So I just learned 3 chords on the guitar, and I said, you know, you can sing any song out of these 3 chords.
Well, sometimes 1 chord, right? Remember Lime and the Coconut?
Yeah, that was where John Lee Hooker came into it, you only need 1 chord.
You only need 1 chord. A lot of Stooges was like that, too. Interesting. Did you start to write your own material, or were you covering other people?
No, I was... I started off, and for some reason or other, I just naturally latched it onto black music more than anything else, and I was trying to do like Platters songs and things like that, and Ray Charles. I liked Ray Charles very much, and I was trying, and so this kind of automatically led me towards blues records and stuff like that. So that's where that path came from.
Oh, and it was Johnny, the cat from Trinidad.
Yeah, and him, and so I thought, you know. Black music's great, and don't need the white music.
Well, things influence us and stuff. Like Johnny singing the Hank Williams, ain't that trip? They inform each other.
Yeah, it's Johnny singing Hank Williams. It's great.
Yeah, right. And something like, Jambalaya, New Orleans stuff.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Right, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what music's for.
Yeah.
Look, you gave me this new gamelan. Beautiful. Let me play it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Show. That chunk of music started with Mike Cooper doing New Gamelan. Then Bomas Prendon with Just Beyond the Door 2. Guitar squeezing. Subtitle, I guess. Vermes do Limbo from Brazil with Ah, Fall and Decline. But after 6 years, Gregory W. Brown's choral. Chris Gregory, I think he's from Derby, part of England. Bird of Light, part 3 of 3. Chris Gregory. Samuel Lockwood, Iowa City with Worry. We shall not speak of this again. Northern Jaw. Up Around the Sun is Tim Kerr's new project out of Austin. Molly Put the Kettle Up. And finally, Mike Cooper, Age Unlimited. So you were always man alone with your music?
No. After, I guess, quite quickly after picking up the guitar and starting to sing, I joined a band. I had a joined a band called Blues Committee. We played R&B stuff, like, you know, Jimmy Reed and Muddy Waters, stuff like that.
Yep.
So plunged straight into the blues gigs. Yeah.
And big difference playing with other people than man alone, huh?
Yeah, sure. And I actually didn't play guitar in that situation. I just sang, and so it was quite a few, couple of 3 or 4 years before I picked up the guitar again and started playing, by which time there was reason to do it because the folk music thing had started to happen in England, and friends of mine opened a folk club, and it was a good opportunity for me to stand up, play the guitar and sing. And so I just learned three songs and got out there and did it on my own. Yeah, and it was good that I did because the band didn't really go anywhere and it folded, so I was left with a solo career, which I pursued from there onwards almost, in fact, yeah.
And what, do you focus more on the guitar instrumentally, or it's still like an accompaniment instrument?
No, I was still saw myself primarily as a singer, but after a while, I kind of honed in on Blind Boy Fuller, who really loved his playing. And I learned to play everything I could find of him, and from that being only one LP, in fact, it was on Philips at the time. And I learned all that stuff, and that became my repertoire. I was a Blind Boy Fuller clone. The interesting thing, as it turned out, was that I was learning this stuff by ear, of course. And after quite a few years later, I met some people like Stefan Grossman, who actually knew how to play this stuff properly. And I realized I was playing it completely wrong, which was a great asset, in fact, because of playing stuff wrong, I actually came out of it with something completely of my own. And so that was quite an interesting thing that I've pursued ever since, in fact.
No, but that's a great point to make, you know. If you would have learned the correct way, which was actually just copying, right?
Yeah,
came up with and found your own voice.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened, in fact. And so I was quite happy about that.
Now, did you move to the National, or did you stay on that acoustic?
Yeah, no, I was with the National, the National, which I only played fingerstyle at that time. And then another interesting coincidence happened. I walked into a coffee place in Reading one day, and there was a guy sat there, and I had my guitar with me in a bag. I carried this thing around in a sack, you know, and he said to me, "What do you got?" I said, "A guitar." And I have a look at it. I took it out, and he said, "Do you know what this is really for?" And I said, "For playing." And he said, no, he said, "This is a very special kind of instrument." I said, "Yeah, I know it's special, but what do you mean?" He said, "Give me a glass." He gave him a glass, and he put the guitar in open tuning, laid it on his lap, and played Hawaiian style. And that was a whole different deal for me. And then I realized what he was talking about, which put me on another road, of course.
Are you talking slack key?
Yeah, well, he put it into an open G, which is a slack key tuning, but he played lap style slide with the glass.
Sure. And that's beautiful. But the slack key, I heard, it came because, like, I guess some Spanish guys left some guitars in Hawaii, but they didn't tell the people how to tune them.
So they say, yeah. But in fact, the Mexicans, and there have been Mexican cowboys, and they actually have tunings, tunings they use anyway, yeah. They have open tunings, yeah, so.
Right.
The Hawaiians did invent a lot of tunings. All the Hawaiian families, in fact, usually have a tune of their own, which they kind of try and keep secret.
Robert Johnson turning around when he did gigs.
Yeah, I've seen a very nice black and white film with no sound, unfortunately, of Ledwood Kaupana, who's a great Hawaiian guitarist, of his father playing guitar, and he's got a paper bag on his hand, so you can't actually see who he's
doing. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Well, you know, what I found out about open tunings with slide, a lot of that came from banjo world.
Yeah, could be. Yeah.
Right, because banjos kind of always worked, could get all that arpeggio thing going.
Sure.
Right. Interesting how everything informs each other, you know, to bring in the next stuff. Using a whole bunch of foundation from the old stuff.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, folk music.
Right. So, this is a sea change. Do you buy a slide or do you use a glass?
Yeah, I actually went and bought a piece of stainless steel water piping. We actually had a blacksmith in Reading, believe it or not, in the 60s. And I went to the blacksmith and he sawed me off like a 3-inch piece of stainless steel water pipe, which I still got and I still use. Oh. I've been using this piece of metal for like 60 years now.
And you think metal's better than glass?
I do. I think metal, well, it lasts longer. You drop glass and it's broken. And I've dropped the tube many times. So.
Good point. What about lap?
What about what?
Lap steel, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Did you ever get into that?
Yeah. Well, that was what I was doing. I played bottleneck and then I started playing lap steel. Only play lap steel now, in fact. I hardly do anything else at all.
You don't play that national anymore?
Yeah, I do. I play it lap steel, though.
I meant them little things. They don't have any sound box. They're just a little neck, right?
Yeah. I've got two or three of those. I've got electric things, and I've got a very nice Vietnamese one. They play it in Vietnam a lot.
In the 60s, right? They were doing instrumental music, kind of surf, but slide.
Yeah, no. I never really played surf and rock and roll. I played blues, and then I played Hawaiian music on it. I played Hawaiian music for quite a long time, real Hawaiian music.
No, I'm sorry, Mike. I meant that Vietnamese music scene. There was a scene in the 60s where they were doing instrumental kind of surfy.
Sure, yeah, of course.
That's what I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What's your opinion about this whole thing about genre and whatever?
Well, genre, I've been through so many genres.
That's right.
Totally meaningless to me.
That's the point I'm kind of trying to make. Music's music, right? And you've used, it's all vocabulary for you.
Yeah, sure. You know, I've listened and played a lot of kind of musics, and it's informed everything that I've done along the way and informs everything that I do now, whether it's like, you know, Hawaiian slack key, John Lee Hooker, or Scratchley Perry, who, God rest his soul.
Yeah, we just lost.
Yeah, I played in a reggae band for a while.
So, did you?
I played in a band called G.T. Moore and the Outsiders. And,
so you played some electric guitar too? Okay.
Yeah, I played rhythm, obviously. Played rhythm guitar in that situation, yeah. Yeah.
A lot of upstroke.
Yeah.
It's really Econo. The R&B guys were like that too, like with Motown and Stax. They would leave so much room for the drums and the bass. I love those guitar guys. Really clipped, really trebly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Curtis Mayfield, right? Oh, my God.
Absolutely, yeah.
Did you ever trip on the way he tuned his guitar? A lot of F-sharps, right? They're tuned to black keys.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like a lot of Chuck Berry stuff was written by, what's his name, Jimmy Johnson,
his
piano player.
Man.
And he's always playing an F-sharp.
Right. Piano keys.
Yeah.
Really good, Mike. We're at the end of the first hour, September 21, 2021. edition What Peter Show special guest Mike Cooper. Hold tight for hour two. September 21, 2021. It's the second hour of the What Peter Show.
They knew as I know now that words will not suffice. That you got taught your feelings as sure as you were given your name. Faded out and back again. What are we doing here?
For Pedro show, we start off the second hour. Gaia Quill to Ballina, Mike Cooper, then Ben Salter out of Tasmania with Forfeiture, Al Margolis with Guitar Ludes.
Guitar Ludes.
Yeah, not Quaaludes. I think you guys called them Mandy's or Mandix or some shit.
Yeah.
About Sid Barrett eating those things. Malama Hanua. To Care for Our Earth, Mike Cooper. So, you know, we played some gamelan stuff. When did you get into the exotic stuff to go with your guitar?
Well, that came out of my Hawaiian music experiences, really. And maybe I should tell you how that happened.
It
went back to my radio listening days as a kid. And in the mornings on BBC Radio, there would always often be a band called Felix Mendelssohn's Hawaiian Serenaders. And I loved this stuff. And eventually, when I discovered lap style play guitar playing, my memory went back to the Hawaiian guitar I heard as a kid. And I linked it back to Hawaiian music. And I just started to investigate that. And felt kind of natural for me to do, which is what I did. And I formed a band. I had a band called the Uptown Hawaiians. But I'd learned something in the 70s when I made some pop records, made records for Pi label. I made four or five albums for Pi. I discovered that if I used jazz musicians as session musicians, and not rockers or other folk musicians, I would end up with a different kind of music, because these guys would contribute rather than just stand there and play and get paid at the end of the day. And so when I formed the Hawaiian band, I did exactly the same thing. And I found guys, improvised music guys, who would be willing to play Hawaiian music because we could play it in a way really that no one else would do. And so I had guys like, I don't know if you know these people, but Steve Beresford, who's a keyboard player and improviser in England, yeah, and Lol Coxhill, saxophone player, sure, in England, and Frank Ricotti, who's a great percussion vibraphone player, and Max Eastley, who's a ukulele and guitar, yeah, player and sound artist. And so I had these guys play Hawaiian music, which they all loved doing. You know, it was something that they probably would never have done if I hadn't asked them to do it. And we made an album together, and we toured, actually. We toured quite a lot in Europe. I think we only ever did one gig in England, but that's England.
Can I ask you, Mike, have you ever been to a tiki room?
I've been to many tiki rooms. Okay. Here in Valencia, we have three.
Wow. Okay.
Yes.
I've been to a couple, one up in the city in San Francisco and one in West L.A. And they're really trippy things. I mean.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I love all that stuff.
One up in the city, it's at the Franklin Hotel. Fairmont Hotel. And it's got like a waterfall.
Of course. if you ever get to London, there's a tiki bar, Trader Vic's, is underneath the Hilton in London, which is by the side of Hyde Park. It's a fantastic tiki bar, that one.
Yeah, really trippy. Look, you made some music with a friend of mine, Elliot Sharp. Let's listen.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
memories of my soul. The 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 memories of my soul.
Thank you.
Afro Pedro show started. That chunk of music with Mike Cooper, Elliot Sharp doing Induction Seduction Production. Has a ring to it. Bootstrappers after that. This is this project I was telling you, Mike, off air. Me and George Hurley from the Minutemen. Elliot Sharp asked us to do this album. It was improvised. I played a little bass. It had rubber band strings. You had to put baby powder on them so your fingers wouldn't stick. Yeah, it was a trip. But he's a beautiful man, and he ain't afraid to experiment. He's a pioneer.
No, yeah, he's great.
Absolutely. Sun Watchers after that with Blind Willie. This is them. They got Dr. Eugene Chadbourne from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, playing guitar with him. And then Pet Bottle Ninja, Glaucus Atlanticus, and finally Mike Cooper, Elliot Sharp with Telegion Neo Proto Dynamics. How does this happen?
Blame Elliot for the title.
Yeah, that's incredible. But Mike, how do you get together with Elliot like that?
Elliot played a gig in Rome some years ago now, back in the early 90s, and I think we did a trio with an Italian guitarist, and then I went to New York in 2000. I told him I was coming, and he said, we should get together and do a gig, and I did a gig with him and, what's his name, the drummer, Lucas Ligeti.
Oh, yeah.
In the Bowery Poetry Club place, whatever that was held in. And subsequently, we got together on odd occasions here, there, and wherever we were in the same time zone and space. And then during the lockdown pandemic, I suggested we do a collaboration online together, which we did. And there's a thing on Bandcamp you can find with two of us playing.
And how'd you do that? Did one guy go first and then send the file, and the other guy play, do it?
No, well, the way I'd approached it, and I did a lot, actually, during the lockdown, because it's been like, it was nearly 2 years, you know, so. What I did was I said, let's do three tracks. You send me three tracks, I'll send you three tracks, and we overdub on each other's tracks. And if we want more, we just do another three or another, whatever, you know, another two. So that's what we did it, share files over the internet and just overdub on the top. Yeah. Right. It's not as great as being in the same room together.
Of course. But it's better than sitting on your fucking hands, though.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It does work. It works if you keep your wits about you.
yeah. Exactly. Now, that gig you did with him in Rome, was it that kind of material? Were you guys playing acoustic?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just a totally free, improvised, extremely loud, I might add, gig. Yeah, well, there was a group of young guys. They were then in their early 20s, who they had an organization called Cervelli Suonali, which actually means brain rattlers. they organized free improvised music gigs right through the 90s, in fact. And we had a lot of guests come over. We had Tom Cora and people.
That guy.
They organized a festival every year.
I should tell the listeners about Tom Cora. We lost him really young, you know, but this guy was a great, great musician. I seen him do shit where he's playing a kick drum and a bass guitar. Cello at the same time.
yeah, fantastic. Yeah,
Tom Cora.
So we had a lot of Americans come through rooms. Rover Saxophone Quartet. That's how come I know John Raskin. So I did a collaboration with John Raskin online as well during the lockdown. Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah. Well, how'd you get to Rome?
I was playing in Rome.
You know what? We're going to wait for next hour because we're at the end of the second hour. So save it, please, Mike. September 21, 2021, edition of Pedro Show. Special guest, Mike Cooper. Hold tight for hour three. September 21, 2021. It's the third hour of the Pedro Show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Pedro So Star at the third hour, Mike Cooper, Aquatech. Then Tollum's Astral Traveling Sessions with Tollum and Berger, number one. And finally, Barish K. Bad, or Barish K. Bad, Sri Lanka Barish. After Rain, Mike Cooper. You've been to Sri Lanka?
I have, yeah, been to Sri Lanka, yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
I would love to go. What's the music like there?
I didn't hear a lot of music there. I tell you what I did hear was a lot of reggae.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, everywhere I went, there was Bob Marley playing. And in fact, in one place we went to, we walked past this guy, this house, and there was a huge, huge painting of this guy outside his house. And it said, the Sri Lankan Bob Marley.
Whoa.
And he looked just like him, and it was amazing. He was a splitting image of Bob Marley.
I got to see him once. He played in 79 at UCLA, and it was a basketball arena, but still sounded great. Family Man, wow, big influence
yeah.
on me.
Yeah, good.
Family Man Barrett. Yeah. So tell me about how you got to Rome.
I went there in, I initially went there in 1984. I was playing there quite often. And then in 1987, I was coming back from, I was going to Rome from London on an Air Ethiopian flight, which I often used to use. There used to be this great Air Ethiopian flight went from London to Rome to Addis Ababa. And I met this young lady waiting for her suitcase to come around the carousel. And we got talking, and I ended up going back there about 6 months later, and I never left. We're still together.
Whoa.
To this very day.
Yeah, you talk about a sea change.
35 years later.
Yeah, that's great. That's beautiful. And then why Valencia?
Valencia. Well, we lived in Rome all that time, and we knew Valencia. We knew Spain. I'd actually lived in Spain previous to meeting her before. And Maria, her name is, her mother lived in Spain as well. And when her mother died, we decided maybe it's time to leave Rome. Rome's a very beautiful city, and it's very enjoyable if you're a tourist. And it's very difficult. It's a very hard city to live in, and it's become worse and worse, and we decided it was time to leave. Came to Valencia, which is a much smaller. There's 4 million people in Rome. There's 400,000 here.
Much,
much smaller city, and it's flat.
And you got the beach?
We by the beach.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's very nice there. You know, the way you compose, do you make little demos for yourself? Or do you just jam and then record that?
Yeah, I'm a real improviser, and I sometimes, you know, like over the summer, I spent this place we've got an incredibly huge outdoor rooftop space, and I'm able to get out up there in the summer, and I do a lot of playing up there, and even recording, and I guess like throughout the year I just sit down and play. And I keep all the stuff, and then when it's time to make a record, I kind of go through all this stuff and see if there's anything in there that I can use and expand and build on. And I don't do much songwriting as such now, even though I still do sing. But a few years ago, I decided to adopt a different way of making songs, as I would call it, not songwriting. And what I started doing was I started taking two of Thomas Pynchon's novels, Gravity's Rainbow and V.
I
went through it, and I kind of used a William Burroughs cut-up technique and made songs that way. And I've been working in that way for quite a long time. And I have a repertoire of about 40 songs now that I've made that way. But the thing is, obviously, I'm cutting these things up and I'm not writing them on an instrument or anything, so they're just words. And then I had to find out what was I going to do with these things, and I decided I would just improvise on the fly live, making up these tunes, and I just sing across whatever I happen to play, and so that they're different every time I do them. Subsequently, I haven't made very many records doing this. There are a few, because it's different every night, and any record is going to kind of freeze it in time. And I get, you know, it is like a photograph, I suppose.
Sure.
When you do, there are a couple. Blue Guitar is one of them, and that's me playing acoustic guitar and singing these things. And there's a couple of other records of me doing it over electronics and electric loop. I have a lot of looping gear I can use on stage, but I managed to find this looping machine which actually doesn't sync everything up, which is what I needed. I wanted to find a machine that I could make loops that didn't go into sync, so they were totally out of sync, these things. So you make a kind of soundscape. And I sing across the top of those. And that's mainly my live gig at the moment. That's what I do. The Exotica thing, I can do that as well, but it requires me doing backing tracks and playing across the top of that, which I don't particularly like doing very much, but I sometimes do it. And I do it to live. I do a lot of work with live music to silent films, and sometimes I do that across the silent films, yeah.
Yeah, they used to be organ players.
Exactly, yeah.
Right, I want to play The Drowned World.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show, last music for this edition, The Drowned World, Jalan Batu After Rain, Mike Cooper. Then Head Boggle, hit from his new album, Ballroom Sight, is the tune. And Mike Cooper, finally, La Malvarosa.
La Rosa.
Yeah, La Rosa. It's 2 hours. La Rosa.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, Mike. You being in Spain, any all these guitar styles you've tried out and all these techniques and the perspectives, what about the flamenco thing?
Yeah, I mean, I love flamenco, but there's not a lot of flamenco around this part of Spain. There is some, but not a lot. And at the moment, because of the lockdown and confinement, all of the flamenco tablos have been closed because those places are really small and people are really jammed into them. That's part of being in that environment, creates that music. And so
I was at one of them in Sevilla.
Yeah, there you
Seville,
go.
It was like $1 cervezas and no PA. And this lady, the dancers, no smiling, kind of Moorish looking lady. The singer man with his palms to the sky, like their blues music. He's singing a lot about Cordoba. And then the guitar man. It made me cry.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Love it. I love it.
So you're soaking it up, right? So it'll come back.
Sure. It will come back. Yeah. Just before I left Rome, in fact, we had 2 years of Flamenco Guitar Festival came through, and there would be like 14 or 15 guitar players and dancers, and that was totally phenomenal. Yeah, they're mind blowing. Those flamenco guitar players now—they're absolutely totally avant garde.
Yeah, incredible. And then also the clapping, the people that got clapping with them, usually family.
Sure,
guys.
Yeah.
It's syncopated all. It's beautiful, man.
Yeah, yeah. We're La Malvaros, Maros is where I actually live in Valencia. And past us down about, I don't know, half a mile down the road here, there's a whole bunch of gypsies living in some building projects down there. And they spend most of their life sitting outside, of course. And at night, sometimes night, especially during the summer, we can hear the music wafting over the rooftop here. It's beautiful.
Yeah. That's a big part of it, though, right? Because it's a melting of, like, Moor and Gypsy and Spain. And Django, too, right? Django has
a gypsy.
Mike, it's been a huge honor to have you on the show. I can't thank you enough.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
Thanks for
asking. And I know you just made some music with some Australian cats. So, you're making the most of the sitch. I love it.
Sure.
Very inspiring to me. Thank you so much.
It's
a big deal for me. I love what you're doing, so please keep on keeping on.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay. Yeah. People, it's been September 21, 2021. The dish what Peter should keep your powder dry.